Yeah, it wouldn't be broadcast to the world. Okay. We are recording now? Okay. All right. Well, here we are at the end of another year. Calming down from all the fretfulness of the holidays, the holy days. And as I was reflecting on what to talk about this evening, the phrase that came up for me was being in a bubble. We've heard that a lot this year about us. Can you all hear me? Okay. It's been one of those years, you know, for history to record. And one of the most repeated things describing this year is how divisive it's been. Dividing the haves from the have-nots. The conservatives from the progressives, all whatever, the people who ride the buses versus the people who use their cars, renters versus owners, anything that people can use to differentiate and pull apart. It seems like this year has been a big year for that tendency in humanity. But as I was reflecting on the expression, being in a bubble, which is something that is ascribed to us Californians, if not the entire West Coast and the East Coast, it's another divisive term. But for me, the feeling that I got about it was that it felt encapsulated, that we were being ostracized somehow and put into the camp of radicals or weirdos or whatever description people want to ascribe to California these days. And frankly, I felt a little offended because it meant that we weren't in touch with the reality of how things really were in the rest of the country. And that in and of itself is a divisive statement, as if people in Kansas and Wyoming and West Virginia don't have the Buddha nature that we have, which we know is not true. And it pits us against those people. And when we say those people, we are generalizing. We don't understand that in the midst of any group of people, there are always incredible variations on whatever themes are represented by those groups. And it seems to encourage a sense of hatred for groups of people, and even us progressives have a tendency to hate people who voted for the wrong person. And so it instills hatred where it's really not required, it's not appropriate. And as we saw, to our great surprise in Virginia and in Alabama, there is a swing back already beginning. Because we can begin to trust that at the heart of being human, there is humanity, humaneness. And when we practice, we have an opportunity to go directly into that humaneness within us. And that humaneness within us is shared by all people, all beings, all beings. Even though we might be deluded sometimes into feeling that we're separate and that we're better than, or have more humanity, more compassion, more mindfulness, more whatever, more fill in the blank. The fact of the matter is that all beings orient around their inner home of Buddha, a place that we reach into when we practice. The reason that we're here in this room tonight, because we like that sensation. We like that feeling of being at home inside of ourselves, which is so personal and so intimate and yet so universal at the same time. So I guess my appeal to myself and to all of us at this last week of 2017 is to be mindful of our tendencies to veer towards judgment and hatred of the other. Because as the Dalai Lama says, even those people that cause suffering are that way because they suffered. Only suffering can cause suffering. So even those people that cause suffering are doing so because they suffer themselves. And in that way, even if we can't extend full compassion to them, which sometimes is tough, I agree, we can at least understand the derivation of their state. And in that understanding, we can expand our hearts to whatever extent they're willing to expand at any given moment. I think that, you know, being spiritual practitioners, whatever that means, might give us a tendency to judge others, look down on people, or make discrimination that is not discernment. You know, paint people gray or black or evil. When we don't take the time to discern, how is it that they are the way that they are? How is it possible that people can be like this? And go into inquiry instead of judgment and hatred. And so my hope is that 2018 will be more a year of investigation rather than judgment in that way. And we being in the Bay Area, which has been a refuge for such a long time for people who are non-conforming, artistic, have unique lifestyles, have different views, have more expansive sense of what it is to live a full life. So many people have come from all over America and the world to the Bay Area to have a sense of refuge and the freedom to be more fully, simply who they are, from places where they were judged or crushed or repressed. And to maintain that hearth of inclusiveness that is the heart of the Bay Area, we need to be attentive to our mind and emotional states. when we tend towards judgment, which we all do, myself included, to be mindful of it. And to be curious, what is a judgment arising from? Why do we veer towards judgment of others? What does it do? What is its benefit, if any? And what is the place of judgment in a world which has extended a broad embrace to people who are unique, peripheral, artistic? Amorphous in some way, even sexually. Why not cultivate that inclusiveness, that hearth of welcoming on a daily basis, on an hourly basis, on a moment-to-moment basis within ourselves, and encourage it because we are in that state. We have a tendency to resonate that with other people. And that way, we can create a larger sangha than just the wonderful group that sits in this room right now. I was here about an hour early, and I decided to park and take a walk along Valencia. It was 6:30. Some shops were open. I wandered in. One shop, a very delightful Australian woman came and wanted to help me, and I said, oh, I'm just wandering, and I'm going to lead a group in an hour, and I have some time on my hands. And she said, what kind of a group? I said, a meditation group. She said, oh my God, in 2 weeks I'm doing a 10-day mindfulness retreat. And I thought, wow. And she's turned on to the retreat because so many of her friends have done mindfulness retreats and told her, you've got to do this, you've got to try it. And I think it's happening. It's happening all over the place in 1,001 ways with 1,001 teachers. People are veering towards their innerness. And then I walked out, and there was a rather heavy-set black man with short sleeves in the cold out there, sitting on the sidewalk with a basket full of trash bags, full of God knows what. Very jovial. I said hello to him. He laughed. He admired my dog. He was very cheery, and I said, and you, aren't you cold? Where's your, you know, where can I get a sweater for you or a jacket for you or something? He says, oh, I'm fine. I'm homeless, but I'm fine. And then I wished him a happy new year, and he wished me a happy new year, and I wished him a better year, whatever that meant for him. And as I was walking away from him, another woman walked by him, who obviously has seen him there on a daily basis or a weekly basis, knew his name, said hello. They swapped a little bit of cheerful gossip. And he's a known, he's a character. And he's received and fondly received. And somehow that brief, very, very trivial set of interactions left me with a feeling of, oh my God, humanity is everywhere. A loving, open heart can be found, an investigative mind, a compassionate interaction between haves and have-nots. Made me feel good. And then I walked along Julian Street to get in the old entrance, and I noticed all the tents there and all those people And they each one said a good evening to me, like, good evening. It was just, they were hanging out, being, companioning each other, even though they lived in a very precarious way. There was a warmth there. And I thought, if they can experience and express that warmth, why can't we? Why can't anybody just be in a expanded, warm, ready to meet and greet inner attitude with whoever? And I think that's the spirit that I want to live in this last week of this new year and communicate, that it's possible under all conditions to come home to our inner sanctuary and radiate peace and goodwill and loving kindness and all the qualities that arise from practice, and explode this illusion of being in a bubble. Understanding that people like us are everywhere, all across the United States, all across the world, practicing, trying to be as humane as possible, suffering, tolerating injustice, but not losing our humanity under the pressure of the events of things, the causes and conditions that arise endlessly. And if our practice can achieve that, then that's good fruits. We are not only practicing for our own steadiness and energy and insight and joy, we're practicing so that we can communicate it all around and support it where we find it and nurture it, especially in dark times. When it feels like the evil potential of humanity seems to be lurking behind the shadows and threatening. There is a very deep power to meditation practice, which can overcome and penetrate evil and hopelessness. And so I hope that you all experience that. And I hope that that is what brings you into this room and into this practice. Not only the hope of that, but the experience of it in your day-to-day lives. So I want to make this talk short because it's a smaller group, and I appreciate and very grateful that you've all come out to meditate together. And I want to give you an opportunity to ask specific questions about the practice or share your wisdom and maybe have me address things that are more specific to your experience, might be more helpful. This is your chance. Yes.
I'm just going to bring the microphone.
Yes. And if you can talk into the mic, it'll be part of general information, it will be shared.
I'm up here because this life doesn't travel.
Don't be shy.
No voice.
We only have 15 minutes. This is an opportunity. Anybody have anything specific they want addressed? No? Yeah? Oh, thank you. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, it does. Whenever you need a lawyer, you know that there is something, some lurking going on from the shadows of things. And, you know, if it's got to do, it's interesting that on the heels of a death, which is possibly second only to birth, the most powerful experience human beings can experience. Right? Death. It's very, very prominent. And it can shatter us open, and it can be so intensely full of suffering and grief, and at the same time so expansive. And in the context of that comes the estate with the money and the property. And it's so interesting to have those two things together. Because they're not good mates, they're not good dancing partners. And so you're reflecting on both loss and grief and greed. That's very tricky. So, you know, greed, when we encounter it in ourselves and in others, is a natural human state cultivated from the urgency of survival. But it's been progressed over the last 7,000-8,000 years into this refinement called the will and the property that it addresses. And it's got nothing to do with survival, really. It's got to do with wanting more. And who gets more? And what is fair? And what did they want? What were their intentions? And then the lawyers come in and introduce a third factor altogether, which is incredibly foreign, but promises to support the righteous. So it's a highly complex emotional state, isn't it? And if you find yourself in anger or in hatred or in judgment going through this process, then that's where you find yourself. People who are greedy for money or property, they are in suffering because they feel they don't have enough. Doesn't mean that they have the right to get it. It just means that we have an opportunity to tap into that they are coming from deep sense of not enoughness. So we can be empathic and even maybe compassionate, even in the legal arena. But it also gives us a view on people that we may not have had before. And that's when the judgment comes in. So it's a rich, rich, depiction of the reality of how people live and what their experience is that you may not have been in touch with before, but that you are learning now. So it's also a learning process. And it feels cruel to have all of this happen when you're dealing with the loss of your mother, which is a very steep kind of a loss. And when we are dealing with deep loss, our heart is vulnerable and open and hypersensitive. So the first person to have a lot of understanding and compassion for is yourself. And you can use that as the foundation stone for going out and meeting other people where they're at. Always coming back. This is what the practice is, always coming back. Always coming back. Go to the lawyer, meet these people, come back. Come back home to yourself and what you're really feeling. And not with judgment. We don't want to judge ourselves, just as we don't want to judge other people. We want to be discerning, but we don't want to be judgmental, you know? So fully accepting, you're angry, you're vilified, you're grossed out, you know? And those are painful feelings. So what do? When you have those feelings, you take care of yourself. The word
discernment.
Really, you know, this is this and that is that. It's different from this is good and that's bad. You know, that's one of the things we really cultivate is when we say clarity, we kind of mean discernment. Being able to see things just for what they are, not through a veil of judgment. You know, because that makes it cleaner. You know, there's less emotional stickiness going on. Yeah. But it's a very sad thing to have grief and greed somehow doing a dance together. So I hope you take very good care of yourself through this process. Come up and talk, or we're going to go back to meditating. It's your choice. I have to stretch my legs for a moment. Oh. Uh-oh. Ah. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for being here this evening. My name is Michael. The gentleman's comments got me thinking about something a little different, but the part to the lawyers in the room has to do with the lawyer too. But so I've been going through a difficult divorce for a long period, and it's interesting what's happening today in that my former wife is dealing with something very difficult herself tomorrow. She has had a 10-year employee in her small business that she is having to terminate because her company's grown and the other team members in her company are literally threatening to leave the work if this person is not removed.
Oh my God, it's a mutiny.
It's a mutiny.
Yeah.
And, you know, I guess what I'm grateful for and feeling a lot of compassion and empathy for my former wife is that I am really feeling how stressful this is to her. I mean, this was a person who literally came in the very early days of her beginning her company, and it was just the two of them for many years.
Mm-hmm.
And my understanding is this news tomorrow,
mm-hmm.
where she's having to have a third person meet with them and all, is going to be very surprising to this person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I guess what I'm hopeful with the Sangha here is just that there could be some goodwill or feelings for both parties. You know, this is very hard on my ex-wife to have to make this termination. And the person who's being terminated, you know, it's going to be a very difficult thing right during this period of the year. So,
yeah.
That was it.
Yeah. But what's interesting is your feeling about it. What is your feeling about all of this?
Well, as a small business person myself,
yeah.
having had employees, I understand it from that level, that sometimes things just don't work out, and you have to make difficult choices. But I'm happy for me that I'm feeling more caring toward my former wife than I have in a while because of what she is like right at this moment.
We
communicated today how stressed out she is about tomorrow's meeting.
Yes.
And you know, I'm glad that I have some sensitivity around this to her. And that I can feel kind of her being scared.
Yes. So somehow it opened your heart towards her,
yeah.
even though you went through a divorce. Because right now she's going through a kind of divorce again.
That's exactly how she explained it.
Yes.
She knows it feels just like a divorce.
Yes.
Again.
Yes. And the rest of the family is going with the person that is getting pitched out. So it's a real kick in her face. Yeah, so it's interesting how sometimes we need to see a person that we've had some long association with and maybe some difficulty with. We need to see them in steep suffering for our heart to open up again to them. There's a scene in Tolstoy, War and Peace, where a prince, you know, the two main male characters are fighting each other. Because they both want the same woman, and they hate each other. And they both got wounded in a battle, and they're lying, not next to each other in cots, but close enough that they're in touch. And here are these two arch enemies, and the one has to have his leg amputated. And in those days, they didn't have any anesthesia. They just gave you a bottle full of alcohol and hoped for the best and sawed it off. And this one heard the other one's agony, and his heart burst open for him. And the hatred vanished. Like, where was it? Where was all this hatred? What was it all about? So it's also a lesson in opening the heart through compassion and the delusional quality of how we establish our responses to people and how very quickly we can hate someone and how very quickly we can let it drop and just be open and caring even though we can't do anything maybe be there and listen, hold hands, but we can't really change their reality, but our heart is open to their suffering. And that's where you are right now with your ex-wife. You know, and that's somehow the nature of our experience, that sometimes we're in this state and something unexpected happens and the state disappears. The person we loved, we hate, and the person we hated, we love. You know, where is the center? Where is the meaning of any of it? But I think that it's really significant for you that you are feeling positive and nurturing, and you are deepening your humanity towards your ex-wife. That must feel, there's something to be said for that as a harmonious feeling. Right?
Yeah, very much.
Yeah, it's a gift. Yeah, I wish her the best. Oh, it's 9:00. Shall we meditate for just 2-3 minutes? Pull it all back together. Remembering that Andrea talked about dana being generosity. Part of generosity is sharing the fruits of the practice, which we can do now for just these last few minutes. Just through wishing that the benefits that we experience through this practice, we send out to our loved ones, to our friends, family, even those people we don't like so much, maybe even some people that we really dislike. Sharing the benefits of the practice, letting it suffuse through the world, all beings. May they know the causes and conditions for joy. All beings, both seen and unseen, may they avoid the causes and conditions of sorrow. And may all beings, both seen and unseen, enjoy that happiness which is unconditioned, condition-free. Thank you very much for sharing this time together with us. And I do wish you an expansive new year.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.